session number 27753, Reel 1.
Mr. Paul Cooper, Reel 1.
Yes, well, I'm Paul Cooper on Reel 1. Paul Cooper, very old at the moment, at 81, and almost 82, born in Bull, in Dorset, a long time ago, and at a very early age I was born. I can remember, would be about when I was 5 years old, that I remember my elder sister, which was, I think, 22 years older than me, as I'm the baby of 10, the perfection, of course, when they stopped. My elder sister died, I think, was it 5 years ago, 94. My mother, the same age, died, and that, of course, was 15 years ago. I was brought up in Bull and was there, you could say, permanently until the war came. At school, I was told my parents were told, as I was a nuisance at school, I'm quite certain, that I was no use of anything else but art. Very crossly, it was said, because I used to so often bother the teachers a great deal, I'm quite certain. Yes, I was interested in art then, and have made a very good living at it for all these years now. My parents said knew perfectly well I was very interested, because I drew and painted whenever I could, and I know perfectly well I was making, and I have photographs of them, illuminated addresses and careful script of writing, which I used to practice every night, reams and reams of paper, when I was 15, and with gold and illuminations and script writing, testimonials that I did even for the local estate here, the Wells estate, I remember very distinctly. I wonder whether they are in the archives now. There, really, I don't mind if they're not in the slightest. But my parents said, would you like to go to the art school? And of course they did the inquiries. And so at 12, I went to the Bull School of Art on Saturday mornings. I think it was a couple of hours, and I was given 10 shillings to get my train fare to Bull. And get a leg of mutton for 7 and 6, a huge thing this was, and I used to be able to go to the cinema, and I think at the most it was 6 months, and I used to have something, an egg on toast and a cup of tea in a restaurant, and still have a penny or two change when I got back home. And then as soon as I became left school, I suppose you could say at 14, my parents, I went to the Poor School of Art full time, and then I had to do study of English and maths and goodness knows what, and history, the Evening Institutes at Poole.
What was your parents' occupation? What did they do for a living?
My father was wounded in the war. I never knew him to a day's work. I got obviously a pension, but he was slightly lame, but really never ever bothered. We had, of course, how I don't know, but we had 7 cottages, one of which I live in now. Not that I ever lived in that as a child, because it was another part of the village. But my parents, my father's family, how we got to Wool, well, I'm sure I know how we got to Wool, because it was through him being wounded in 1916 in France, and was brought back to Walgett Heath, hospital, military hospital, and then my parents came down. Now, what I do know, of course, the ancestors, or whatever you like to call them, great-great-grandfathers and so forth, the Cooper family in Newbury, Berkshire, go back a long, long way, and they were great, apparently, super cabinet makers of the old era, and in fact, the almshouses still exist in Newbury today, and of course many, I know one particular Cooper pub there, you know, they are still in existence, so I know little about that, but all around I know people the villages around there still, when I was there say 20 years ago, remember the family quite well somehow, I don't know, but they certainly, because obviously they had the ancestors, if you like to call them that, around there had, of course, lots of workers, very skilled workers, so I suppose whether the firm exists, I really do not know and don't care if it is.
Did your father's injury, because he was out of work, how did that affect your family?
Well, it didn't affect me. I can't imagine that it did affect me.
Was life tough then?
Yeah, because, you see, how? I don't know. Because, all right, I had five brothers, three sisters, 6 brothers and 3 sisters, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, that's right, 6 brothers. But what I think, and have never inquired, and it's a bit late now, I've got one brother left in France who's recently been honoured by the French for his service of the French language and culture, which I don't think is bad from a boy from Wool. And of course he's very French, really. But how my parents were able to purchase from the estate here, when people now in the farm too are only rented and belong to them, I do not know. But we had 7 of them, I don't believe we were rich at all. We ate well, I can say, and there was always Father Christmas. How that was managed, I don't know. But I distinctly remember at about 10 or 11, I found a big pile under a bed, Father Christmas things, which I had to keep quiet because I like Father Christmas. I still do, actually. Anyway, then time went on, and I remember. There is no doubt about it. When I went into the war at 17 and a half, I was an ignorant, pampered twit. Knew nothing of the world whatsoever. Nothing at all. And you can imagine the surprise when I was suddenly in the Navy, in the barracks, or whatever you like to call it, in Portsmouth. I just can't explain how incredibly different world it was.
Did you think there was going to before the war, before the outbreak of war, when Britain declared war in Germany, did you think there was going to be a war?
No, well, I can tell you the story of that, because I Paul School of Art, but you see, Christian, religious, I was going to Mass every morning at 8:30. Serving, as it was called, and then coming home and getting my case and whipping down to the station to catch the 9:18 train to Poole every morning, you see. And then one day we had guests here who came from London, were going back on the Sunday. We were coming home, walking from Bindon Abbey, walking, Sylvia, and I remember halfway up the lane, Bindon Lane, my parents said, "What time do you want to catch a train?" "Well, I don't really know," they said. I forget who they were. And straight away, my mother said to me, "Tony," which I was called, Paul Anthony, "Tony, would you go on, hurry to the station and ask what time the next train or two trains to London?" And I remember running to the station, in Wolf Station, and asking at the ticket office, "The next train to London." Now, this is point, because as a kid of 15, I said, "The next train," and of course they knew me and knew everybody, of course, in one station. He said, "Don't know when they'll be, don't know if there are going to be any, there's a war on." And, you know, a kid being told that, I said, "It's been declared." Didn't really mean a thing. And I hurried back and I said, "He just said he don't know whether there's going to be any because there's a war on." And I remember saying this and the shock, my parents stunned, absolutely. My mother had hurried, my father always hurried back, by the way, to get start lunch ready. This was, I think, 10:30 mass or something. And he'd always hurried back, and there they were, stunned, and tears, you see, because there were my other brothers, would all be of age, and they knew perfectly well, 15 plus, I'd been there. And good gracious, you know, I'm sure they said a prayer or two. That was the beginning of the war, and that was the spot, and I can point it out today, down Bindon Lane, when that happened in 1939, you see.
How did it make you feel at the time?
I think to me, it was some kind of excitement. You see, there is no fear of war. I never did have any fear of war. It was just, yeah, which is the point. Now, you see, within couple of years, I kept going. In fact, I was at Poole School of Art. I remember the date, on the 25th of March, 41. And I was in the Navy on the 26th of March. I recall it so much. Oh, absolutely clear as anything. And I remember going to the Wall Station, my father coming with me, my mother crying her eyes out on Colliers Lane, 25 Colliers Lane, where we lived, and I was born. He took me and he cried his eyes out. Yeah. The youngest son going to war. So, anyway, all five went.
Why did you join the Navy?
Superior, the senior service. Yeah, that's a very good point, because that was something I had to do. Senior service, the Royal Navy. And of course, duly my papers came. And I remember the horror of my mother, you know. And I hope you don't pass A1. You know, so off to Dorchester I went. I can't think. I've been trying to think what building it was. Anyway, full medical, and what service you want to be in. So Royal Navy, of course. Well, was to that effect, I suppose. And then A1. All you have to do is wait for your call-up papers. Right, come back. You see, and told my mother, full of joys of spring. A1. You see, fighting fit. What more can a man want, or a young man want? A1. Again, tears. Baby son you see, fit for war.
Had your other brothers already gone off to...
Oh, yes, I had. One brother went into the Royal Air Force. One brother in the Navy served on the HMS Revenge. My next brother, Phil, who's still alive today in France, was teaching in Guernsey, and he was evacuated with his school to Scotland, incidentally, just before the Germans got in there. That's an interesting story, really, because suddenly I was introduced, somebody came to the door, and I didn't know who they were, only about, I think, probably 6 years ago, came to this door here and said, forget his name, your brother saved my life. Well, you know, Phil, because they were to be evacuated, his school, and as many children as he, because he knew just about everybody in Guernsey, a destroyer was coming at 4 o'clock on a particular morning to take them, to evacuate them. The German, they knew, were about to invade the Channel Islands. And he told me the story here. I hadn't met him before, and really hadn't a clue. And I said, you know, well, what do you mean? He said, well, we were to, my brother told me since, that they'd catch him, the destroyer was at 4 o'clock in the morning of the, all secret, of course, dead secret. And apparently, during the time, they suspected that they should change the time, and it was brought forward to 2. Now, these lived the other side, two brothers lived the other side, one coming to the door, the other side of the island, and my brother got his car, which he had to leave there, and went to the other side of the island to collect them. And I think it was dead on about 1:45 to collect them, and they were in bed, to take them to the St. Peterport dock to board the destroyer 2 hours before. And he swears he saved their lives because, well, that's a debatable point, of course, but at least they'd be occupied, because they were within 24 hours occupied, and they were all taken. And as he said, they lived it up in Scotland to the end of the war.
It must have been relief when your brother got back from
there. Yeah, yeah. So, anyway, that's the story of that, which I think is interesting, because that's another part of the war which certainly the family was involved. So, Phil was still carried on with his teaching, and I remember he became a prominent member of St. John's Ambulance people in Scotland, and we have splendid photographs of that. But he had his school children, as it were, a foster parent, I suppose you could call it, of the children. Now, my older brother was had an important post in supervisor in a factory. Ammunition or secret ammunition business, or what would they call it, explosives, something or another, which of course at that time was never divulged. And also my elder brother went to Scotland, and he was right in some of the very first people who that were involved in radar. And I didn't know this till after the war, of course, what they were all doing. And, of course, very top secret, as he was saying. So that's all of the actual immediate brothers.
Must have been difficult for your mum, you being the youngest.
Yeah,
son.
That's it.
She'd want to try and keep you for
a long time. That's right. Oh, yes. Yes, hence the tears at the station, because they have realized the gravity of it. Not I, not likely, because straight away I suppose they looked at credentials and stature and attitude. You know what you do, slap the floor for 20 minutes before an hour's workout, and then in the morning and afternoon for an hour, slap the floor, you know, to harden here. This is still on the tough part because of scorcher. But, you know, just horrifying today, of course, to think that at such an age, seriously learning to kin, bare hand. I mean, absolutely horrifying, sick.
Tell me where you went from the day that you're past day one. What happened to you then?
From the day I left Wool.
From the day that you came back here saying that you passed your medical and you were E1.
Well, of course, I went back to school in Pool and say, you know, want to make the RMA one. And, of course, you realise that quite a number that you think are healthy just didn't make it. And I just felt sorry for them.
Were the tests quite rigorous to pass you, whether you're fit or not? Or were they? Were the tests quite rigorous?
Well, certainly physical tests were exceedingly so. And, of course, I know. I can't recall them asking any medical reports, but I gather they would, and I'm sure my mother would have given them one if she possibly could. Oh boy, she would have got there, because she was a little tiny person that ruled us with a firm hand, and my father, which is towered above her, I should say, about 3 feet. Well, perhaps that's a slight exaggeration, but he was 6'3", and I don't think she would have reached 5 foot. That was the beginning of war service, and as I said, for a whole 3 months, slapping the floor and learning to kill, and then.
So you got your call. You got your call-up papers one day.
Yeah, that's right.
Where did you report to? Where we asked to report to?
Portsmouth.
Right. Yeah. Tell me in detail what happened from then.
Well, as I say, it was to the station, and the sadness of my parents. Then in amongst 30 in one hut of types that I would never ever been able to or want to meet, could say then or again, because I couldn't understand their language, being, I consider, quite coarse, as I said, a pump and twit. In the way I look at it today, because I knew nothing of life, really, nothing at all. So then, of course, it was hard work, and I must admit, I enjoyed it to be the best at it, and I reckon I was. They call me Super Cooper, and I had also came. I got the Super Cooper because Superman was new when we went to America, but that's jumping the gun.
If you tell me what happened in those initial weeks of training.
Yes.
Tell me what happened, what you did.
Well, mainly parades, of course, discipline, left, right, a little of that, or say a lot of that. And to be able to do it, as I became a CW candidate, Commission 1 candidate, very rapidly. Then it was hard graft in the gym, of every kind of physical test you could possibly get. And when you put your hand, left or right, whichever it was called, over to let the one in front of you throw you over his shoulder as far as he could throw them. And eventually I was able to throw somebody about three people up the line by putting your hand over it. So they grab it, twist it, and off you go. Or arm gets smashed. And if you don't fall properly, your back gets smashed, your shoulder gets smashed, your neck gets broken. Really, it's quite crazy.
And this was training for the Royal Navy.
Training for commando type.
Oh, this was.
Oh, yes. Oh,
so it wasn't the Royal Navy at the time?
Oh, it was the Royal Navy.
Right.
All part of the Royal Navy, yes. But it is terrible today. And what I think, I don't think, when you hear about perbright and feeble creatures saying you booed me by a non-commissioned officer, to me it makes me laugh. Go back to kindergarten and go in a nursery, but not in a force. Hardened person, no feeling. As my late wife always said, that he went in there as a gentle, sweet-natured person, and he's come out like a bad-tempered old curmudgeon, terms to use, because I see red very rapidly, and immediately, though I don't do this kind of thing, I just say, no, go away, stop it. But I don't know if the cunning of unarmed combat, real stuff, and I don't mean judo stuff, that's stupid. I just say, stop it, because as long as my hands are moving, they don't know where they're going to go, and all I need to do is watch your eyes, and you won't be able to move any part of your body without me knowing. And by the time you do that, you're flopped. And all I say, get away. For goodness sake, go away. But at the same time, it can be chop on the neck or underneath the chin or in the solar plexus. As long as I am moving, my hands are moving, they're dangerous. But not, yeah, you all watch it. That makes me giggle. And if anybody comes to me like that, I shall kick them right where I'm at. On the shin, on the kneecap, and at the same time, chop them behind the head, and they're down. If not killed, they'll be stunned for me to trample on them. To me, of course, at that time, I only realized since how dreadful it all was.
There was initial, you went to Portsmouth first,
yes,
of all, and how long was it you were there? 3 months?
3 months.
And what were you being trained as in those 3 months?
Well, it was virtually, which is called today, Royal Navy Commando. But at that time, I didn't know. But it was the first of the force, Combined Operation Force. And at the end of this, the Chief Petty, I remember so well, he said, Cooper, in the best petty officer way, Cooper, I'll tell you, Sammy, you'll never volunteer for anything in the Navy. Well, do I have to? You know, he said, I should take this job. The commanding officer wants to see you this morning. Just like that. Just two or three days before I was due and my training complete. It was complete by then. And so before the commanding officer, they said, well, I hope you enjoyed all the, what you know, the usual kind of pleasantudes. And I said, fine, sir. And he said, I've got to offer you a special job. So I said, yes, sir. So he said, I want you to take 24 men down to Braxton Bay and Burdham in Sussex to start one of the first combined operations camps. And thank you. And off I went. Now, what I didn't know, waiting for me next day, were 24 men over twice my age, a kid, just 18, a kid. We had civilian ration books. I even, the commanding lieutenant brought money, pay slips from Portsmouth, handed them over to me, and I paid them. We fed ourselves and had really no connection with anybody outside. Fed ourselves with civilian ration books. And I took possession of the yacht club house at Burdon. And I had to appoint someone to take charge of the one at Brackenham Bay holiday camp, which was rather an interesting job. We got on well, the locals treated us, they didn't know what it was all about. Well, nor did I for that matter, not particularly. I'd been told what it was, but at that time I know we had special badges, and those were the very first. I've still got one somewhere. Gold braid with the rifle and anchor and the wings across. I'm proud of it now. I survived, you know. But
sorry, when you joined the Royal Navy at Portsmouth,
yes,
did you know it was going to be commanded